What is the Podcaster Matrix? The Podcaster Matrix is your source for podcast media hosting. Get your entire podcast library hosted now at podcastermatrix.com.
When you hear the words Friday the 13th, what do you think of? Well, most will recollect a certain impossible-to-be-killed masked individual bearing sharp weapons of all kinds. There's another Friday the 13th that deserves attention. In 1987, Friday the 13th, the series, created a rich tapestry of completely original storytelling. Based on a series of curious, devilishly enchanted objects that must be recovered and returned to the vault to prevent truly dark fates from befalling their owners. This is the detailed revisit and review of the adventures of their reacquisition, episode by episode. You won't find any hockey masks here. This is the Curious Goods Podcast from Two Guys Talking Horror.
The brain is a very strange thing. The connections, the electricity, the memories, and all the finer things, they're all there. But what about the soul? It's what makes us human and separates us from the animals, to be sure. But inside this episode, that concept gets our daring trio into huge trouble and spins a cloud of what's right, what's wrong, and what would a daddy do to ensure the restoration of his daughter? This episode of Friday the 13th, the series, asks hard questions, gives spectacular, guttural answers, and entertains all at the same time. And it's time to review all of it inside this episode of the Curious Goods Podcast. A retelling, a revisit, and a complete educational detailing of each and every episode of Friday the 13th, the series. This time, Season 2, Episode 15,
Better Off Dead.
Greetings, everybody. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
And I'm Nicholas J. Hearn, your other host.
Nick, some quick housekeeping. The value of skeletons and planning in podcasting. Nick, yesterday I had the wonderful time of chairing, once again, the St. Louis Podcasters Meetup, where we focus specifically on the planning processes of podcasting, which is something I think that anybody that's even contemplating podcasting needs to make sure that they implement.
Right.
I would use our program as probably one of the best samples of that. For those of you that listen and are entertained by our podcast, I really would say that there's one reason. It's Nick's brilliance.
Yes, my brilliance.
Beyond Nick's brilliance, there's also what I would consider a ton of planning. Beyond watching each of the episodes on a Sunday morning, usually, you and I are then detailing back and forth what needs to be inside the retell that's valuable and funny and helps establish memories and
we
blah.
We keep people informed and entertained.
Right. And then the rest of the podcast, and it doesn't mean that the entire podcast is scripted. Not all of the words that we say are scripted, but it does mean that there is a plan.
Yes.
Because without a plan, and I'm not kidding, even if it's only a series of bullet points that you guys use for a podcast, pretty please use something for your podcast. Mm-hmm. It needs to not just be a title of something and you sit in front of a microphone and then bloviate for 45 minutes. It needs to be something that has a path and a cadence. Otherwise, what you're doing is you're literally turning on a microphone, bloviating, and then turning it off, and hopefully something good came out. And I don't find any of that almost all the time ever educational.
And that's the goal. And unless you actually plan on editing that as well to make it sound like you had moments of brilliance and you just string all that brilliance together. If you just hit record, talk, and hope for the best without any planning whatsoever and then push it out into the world, I can just say this. I don't listen to any podcasts like that.
And I don't either. The just somebody yakking into a podcast because it's a Thursday. I don't.
Yeah, there has to be at least some sort of list of talking points to keep people on track. Because if you don't keep people on track, well, the train derails and you just go all over the place.
Yeah. I think the other thing, too, is that remember the podcasts are searched by subject or topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have any of that either detailed or listed beyond what's inside of your subject line, how do you ever expect anybody to ever find and or glean, latch on to what you're talking about?
Right.
Anyway, I don't want to beat the drum too hard there, but the value of planning is something that I know Nick and I enjoy wonderfully across all of our podcasts. We would encourage all of you that have the inkling to jump into podcasting to also adopt that. And please feel free to reach out to Nick and I, and we'll talk more about that personally to you via the forum on our website over at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. The Animal Academy Podcast. We are literally preying on the more animalistic tendencies of humans inside of this episode. So I wanted to make sure that we're talking about a new podcast on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network that also focuses on animals. Allison White is the new host of a new podcast called The Animal Academy Podcast. And it's something I encourage all of you, if you have animals in your house of any kind, whether it's just the dog that sits on the couch and doesn't do much of anything, or if you've got competition animals inside of your home, you need to be listening to this podcast. Regardless of what kind and level of pet you have, there are all kinds of light bulb moments that are inside of this podcast. And really, that kind of gets back to the first point we were talking about in housekeeping, which is, at least for me, a podcast really does have to have at least one light bulb moment about something that I'm listening to. Otherwise, I don't actually know what I just blew my time on. I always want something there to illuminate me from a podcast experience. And I'm telling you, the Animal Academy Podcast, it's going to set up a lot of light bulb moments for a lot of people. Go check it out over at animalacademypodcast.com. You can also check out the links to both of these things inside of the show notes for this episode over at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Nick, it's time to sprint towards the retell of this episode. Are you ready?
I think I'm going to stroll.
Fine. Stroll we shall into the retelling of this episode. Season 2, Episode 15.
Better Off Dead.
The radio inside a car is being tuned to orchestral slow jams. A man drives down the street, peeping at the sights around him. A man, a woman walking. Another woman sitting idly by. Another couple of... Oh, they're hookers! Streetwalkers extraordinaire! He stops. He spies a gorgeous woman in a purple jacket.
Hope you've got motel money, honey, because I'm freezing.
He unlocks the door to his family truckster, and off they head! They casually walk up to... a house? She's amazed at the digs, and thanks him for keeping her warm. After entering, he ushers her into the smoking lounge to make them a drink. He's going upstairs to check on his daughter? Huh? As he enters upstairs, an almost inhuman screeching emanates from a room at the end of the hall. As he closes the distance, the screeching becomes louder. His daughter is in full-on exorcist mode, lashed to the bed.
Daddy will have your medicine in a minute.
The young prostitute downstairs warms herself by the fire. She pours drinks for them both. He re-enters.
Let's get it over with.
He takes her into a dark room. She casually enters inside. He snaps on the lights and, hey, pets! Monkeys? It's a series of cages with primates galore. He's a scientist.
I don't do anything weird. And it's gonna cost extra for me to work in here.
She begins disrobing, but first he asks her to lie down on the gurney. He then restrains her to it and asks her,
comfortable?
She spies the monkeys and wonders what's going on.
No animals suffer inside my lab.
He then produces a massive silver syringe and plunges it deep into her neck, eventually reaching deep, dark regions where only God can wonder what exists. After the extraction, he then heads upstairs to his daughter's room. She cannot be sedated. That is, until she, too, has the needle inserted into the same place on her neck, and now the juice is injected into the young girl's brain, who instantly is now sedate and normal. He unleashes Amanda and hugs her lovingly.
What a crazy way to begin an episode, Mike.
Across town inside the Curious Goods Antique Shop, Jack and Ryan are reading newspaper articles about yet another streetwalker missing.
It's evidently an epidemic.
Mickey arrives and has a college friend in tow. It's Linda, her friend from college. You remember her, don't you?
This is the first time we're meeting her.
All right, but hey, it's Linda from college. Awesome. She's been staying with them at the shop for a while now, and, you know, it's their pleasure. Back in Daddy Warren's home, a doctor, Dr. Chadway, Warren's former boss, and Daddy Warren are discussing his daughter's current status and sad deterioration. You see, Dr. Chadway believes it's time to commit young raging Amanda into the state hospital for everyone's best interests. Just as he finishes the sentence, Dr. Chadway turns the corner and witnesses Amanda, who is dressed, calmly talking, and happy?
Go back and play now,
says Daddy Warren.
How is this possible? Are you testing something on her? Let me examine her.
I'm her doctor for now. I don't need any help.
Back inside Daddy Warren's lab, Daddy Warren is documenting and recording the process of his experiments. As he continues bloviating, he casually walks down the rows of caged monkeys that eventually lead to larger cages. And the final one holds the now hospitalized gowned streetwalker who has regressed into a very angry state.
What did you give me?
I didn't give you anything. I took something from you.
And apparently, it's time to take more. He enters into the cage, and as he does, the hospital-gowned streetwalker escapes. She rages through the house like an angrily drooling hunchback and out into the night. She scurries into the forest. The doctor realizes he can't possibly catch her and whip pan to Ryan and Linda. You know, Linda, Mickey's college roommate, who's been misinserted into this episode for drawn-out pathos. Ryan and her inside the car as they drive the speed limit through the forested speedway and hitting her, they send the young, angry hunchback streetwalker over the hood, into the air, and onto the center of the roadway. Ryan, horrified that Linda has apparently killed this woman with her car, scampers to check her vitals.
She's alive.
Ryan heads to an incredibly conveniently placed payphone.
Super convenient.
To report the vehicular manslaughter he's witnessed, and Ryan is struck in the head and knocked out by a very tired Daddy Warren. The not-so-good doctor then turns his attention to Linda, who is chloroformed inside the car and hauled off into the night. Later on, after the cobwebs clear, Ryan rises to a cranked neck and a bulging skullcap. The former raging streetwalker, now turned car-collided dead body, is still in the middle of the road, and he struggles to make sense of all of it. Inside the lab, Linda awakens and sees the lab.
No shit.
She's restrained and is reminded,
don't struggle. You only hurt yourself.
It's time to find out answers to a series of riddles. Daddy Warren prepares to extract the needed soul juice, and once again, the doctor's needle hits home. Liquid extracted. He continues to document and record all of this information, but something has changed. Rather than just continue the injections, a portion of Linda's brain will be extracted and inserted into his daughter's brain. Isn't that a nice daddy?
Science!
Across town inside the one police department for every episode, Jack, Mickey, and Ryan are learning more about the former raging streetwalker now turned car collided dead body, and that whomever had taken her has apparently now taken Linda! Linda, the college roommate! You all remember her, right?
Yeah, Linda. Right, she's gone.
As the morning comes, Daddy Warren is visiting Amanda inside her room. He promises her that great things are happening. He encourages her to get dressed, and as he goes to prepare her for her day, suddenly, the doorbell rings. It's Mrs. Schiller! Mrs. Schiller is a nurse that Dr. Chadway has sent over, courtesy of the court!
Where is the child?
As she thunders inside without permission to see the status of his daughter. Inside her room, Amanda's playing with a cute stuffed animal, and then she experiences a headache and begins to twist off the fluffy animal's head. The pain and lack of control has come back. She splits the stuffed animal in half and begins groaning. Inside the Curious Goods shop, our three intrepid heroes are trying to understand more about what's going on inside this episode. Ryan remembers there being a lab coat on the figure that struck him. Jack Marshak,
man of manifest action,
grabs the manifest and begins magic knowledge action. Inside of Dr. Chedway's office, Daddy Warren is trying to explain what he's found in the center section of the brain that controls animal behavior. He's found the physical seat of the human soul.
It's not in animals. It's only in people.
As a thick cello music starts, he explains the tissue transfer and research process, and Chedway wants answers.
I'm calling the state hospital to come and get your daughter. Comply or you'll go to prison, you psychopath.
Something makes us think that threats don't go over well inside the house of Daddy Warren. Meanwhile, inside the Curious Goods shop, Jack, Mickey, and Ryan have sleuthed the solution to today's episode. You see?
According to the manifest, a Chicago doctor from the 1800s traveled to London and committed a handful of murders. Five, in fact, all prostitutes. And before the guy was hung, he claimed he was Jack the Ripper. Now, according to the manifest, that antique syringe was sold to a Dr. Chedway.
Time to have a talk with Chedway over at the state hospital. Back inside Daddy Warren's house, Nurse Schiller is trying to overbearingly feed Amanda, but it's not working. Daddy Warren insists that Nurse Schiller leave and forces her out of the room. Shortly thereafter, he has a conversation with his daughter, who then tries to attack him. As he recoils, he withdraws the massive steel syringe once again and injects the soul juice into her once more. All of which is witnessed by Nurse Schiller, who sprints off to make an emergency phone call about what she's seen. Outside the Warren home, Mickey, alone, whatever, somehow, is here to get answers. As she comes to the front door and rings the bell, Daddy Warren has tossed the nurse down the stairwell and whoops!
Oh my!
She's dead at the bottom of the staircase. Mickey casually knocks on the door and asks,
hello?
Daddy Warren unlocks the door and, hey, Mickey walks inside, alone, unaccompanied, and then sees the fallen nurse at the bottom of the stairwell. As she leans over to check the vitals of the now apparently dead nurse, she's craned over the head with a Ming vase. One of only four in existence.
Now it's three, Mike.
Out in the yard, Daddy Warren is tending to a pair of white orthopedic shoes. Oh, in the body of the nurse that he just buried. Inside the lab, Mickey witnesses Linda, who is now in her full rage on glory. The time has come for Daddy Warren to prepare to extract the piece of the human brain that will illuminate his daughter. It's time to burrow and make a core sample inside Linda's head with a massive, also silver bone drill, the size of which you could not possibly imagine.
Pretty damn big.
It's honking, for sure. Mickey suddenly realizes that if Linda doesn't work out, guess who's next? She quickly and frantically shares the details of the cursed syringe with Daddy Warren, but Daddy Warren isn't having any of it.
I'm going to find Linda's soul.
Inside the state hospital, Dr. Chedway is being educated by Ryan and Jack about the cursed syringe.
We believe the syringe is being used in a series of murders. Where is the syringe, Dr. Chedway?
Oh, well, my antique syringe collection, I keep that one right. What? Who could have taken it?
Who has access to your office?
Aha! Daddy Warren had access before he was fired. Dr. Chedway shares that he and Warren were studying something called hyperviolent syndrome.
During their research and experimentation with animals, it seems that Daddy Warren left a dirty, used syringe out, and his daughter got pricked by it, actually infecting her with the disease. So really, this is all Daddy Warren's fault.
Dr. Chedway, where can we find him?
Inside the lab, the doctor's slow jams start, and rubber gloves begin to snap. Mickey cries out,
for God's sake, stop this!
Don't you understand? I can save hundreds of innocent children. Isn't that worth one more night?
No!
Jack Marshak.
Man of hailing taxi action.
And Ryan race towards Daddy Warren's address. They're working out the final details of the story inside this episode. By the way, the taxi driver is clearly not paying attention to where he's going, but there's no time for that now.
Nobody likes an eavesdropper, Mike.
Inside the now bloodied lab, the operation is done. We find that Linda has been murdered. Mickey has screamed herself into silence, and Daddy Warren found and extracted the source for our humanity. Now it's time to collect the final sample, the one that will restore his daughter to her previous familial glory. That's a huge problem for Mickey, though. Upstairs, inside of Amanda's room, Daddy Warren collects his drugged-up, prepared-for-surgery daughter and begins helping her down the staircase.
Everything's going to be fine.
Ryan and Jack arrive at the Warren house. The front door's locked. Jack Marshak.
Man of lock-picking action.
Does the deed, and they begin the reconnoiter. Once again, deep inside the lab, the Dr. Slow Jams continue. The plan? Daddy Warren will be using Mickey's soul to implant into his daughter. Jack and Ryan continue to search the house. Ryan goes up, Jack stays on the ground floor, and eventually Ryan finds Amanda's room, complete with restraints and drool. Back down in the lab, the drill whirring begins once again. Jack finds the door to the lab and hears the mayhem from inside and screams for Ryan to come to his aid.
Ryan, down here!
Ryan begins his door-breaking activities. Daddy Warren realizes that the jig is up. He uses a syringe on Mickey and, fearing capture, hides inside the cavernous laboratory with his sedated daughter in tow. Ryan and Jack eventually make their way in. Ryan and Jack find Mickey and remove her from the table. The good news, Mickey is alive and free. The bad news, Mickey has now become a rage-filled, drooling psychotic whose soul juice is missing. She attacks Ryan. Upstairs, Daddy Warren collects the hunting rifle from his mantle. Amanda also begins experiencing one of her rage bouts. And as Daddy Warren cocks the rifle, Amanda sprints into action, attacking her father. Scratching, biting, and clawing. Warren once again withdraws the syringe from some place that no one can determine. But before he can administer it, Amanda pushes him back and he careens off the parapet, falling to his doom. Back inside, Mickey Rage Monster versus Dalian is on. Mickey's got the advantage, but then a right uppercut to the jaw sends Rage Monster Mickey crashing to the floor. She's knocked out, and not a rage-filled moment too soon. The only sound left in the lab are Amanda's Rage Monster growls. Days later, inside the Curious Goods shop, we guess everything is fine. Mickey is in her room. Recovering? Amanda is safely inside the state hospital behind padded, well-intentioned walls, and now it's time to drink! Ryan wonders, what if Daddy Warren would have found the cure to insane violence?
Even if he did it for love, can anyone justify the process of finding the cure?
With the item being put back into the vault, the cursed item inside this episode is...
Recovered!
Every episode of Friday the 13th has goods and bads. It's time to focus on the goods. Super tight script. Wow.
Yeah.
Don't you love it when a picture frame like this, that is this script, and then everything else that's inside the creative team all works like this? This was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that the story is... really, for the very most part, cut and dried and given to you on a silver platter.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that inside this episode.
It didn't seem, except for maybe a handful of occurrences, it seemed like everything in this episode was important to the episode.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And when you can actually...
And fostered it along.
Right.
Because that's something else that's missing inside of a lot of television nowadays.
Well, and it helps with the pacing.
Oh, yeah.
When you can actually have a story that... everything you have, talk, character development, anything like that, All of it builds on top of itself.
Yeah.
None of it is superficial.
I agree.
And like I said, there is a little bit of that, but not enough to derail any part of this episode. Even the techno babble of the science talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a brain surgeon. You're not a brain surgeon.
Right.
I can't be 100% sure that the science was even halfway correct
right.
in this episode, but the way it was delivered and the way that it sounded being delivered, I bought it.
Yeah. Well, what I think also is cool is that we know that this series is about cursed items. So mm-hmm. there's your one asterisk. The second asterisk that comes up is when you start talking about soul and things that are much more loose
mm-hmm.
than what you could go and grab a book and read about and have factoids that you can go and pluck. That's where it instantly takes on this ethereal thing that I would compare very much to back in the 70s when somebody said the word force. Well, it didn't mean much of anything until 1977 when it
right.
meant everything.
Yes.
But what did it actually mean? And that's what I think I miss nowadays about Star Wars, is that back then, after you had seen the original Star Wars and even the first three films,
yeah.
the word force was this thing. It didn't have a finite set of principles that you would need to then go look up and know and understand that at 178 midichlorians level, you insert what would
How
happen.
How dare you use that word?
Right. Well, the bottom line, though, is that the amorphous template layover of what's being discussed of the process inside of this, I thought was perfect. An understandable villain. Who can't get behind a father wanting better for his kid? This is tremendous, and especially as a father, I think anybody that has any endearment to anybody, your significant loved one, if you wanted them to be better, what would you do to have that happen?
How far would you go? Yeah.
Right. Where is the line? And again, I'm so incredibly lucky that I don't have to wonder about something like this.
Hmm.
But it instantly makes you nod when somebody says, look, the guy has, his daughter has a problem. Don't you want it fixed? Well, yeah, I do.
Sure.
I do want the daughter's
Do
pain
I go out
away.
And kill for
right,
it?
Exactly. And having the understandable asterisk villain inside of this is also another piece of a very endearing story that propels the entire episode.
Yeah. This episode harkens memories of one of season one's great episodes, What a Mother Wouldn't Do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Now we actually
right.
get to see the reverse. This is a father, and this is a father of science. He's very analytical. So it's not just that, oh, that feeling of hope, I need to save my child.
Yeah.
It's, I can fix this.
Yes. Yes.
I can do this. Because he doesn't believe in the cursed item. He
right.
just, they never talk about it in the episode, but somehow, some way, Warren just decides, well, I'm going to steal this very large syringe because it looks like it.
And shove it into hookers.
Right. It looks right. like it could actually reach the brain without right. me having to go through the skull.
It's one of the pieces of this episode that, you know, it's given to you inside of the story and the pace of the story so that you don't have to think that far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was never a point where he goes, okay, well, I've got this, I don't know what, 21-inch syringe that I'm going to shove in the bottom of somebody's jaw, and eventually it's going to get to the right place in the brain, and I'm going to extract juice. Those words never happen inside of this episode at all.
Right, right.
It's just, it's a solution. It's an answer to a question. And I like that a lot. It reminds me of times when, before I started formally reviewing entertainment, I could just watch something and it would be something different. Where now, especially after all of my perspective reviews and working with law enforcement and everything else, I have those questions innately built into my makeup. And very often they become speed bumps for me inside of entertainment watching. Because, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that happens inside of movies and TV.
Right.
And the instant it goes off the Goonie crap-o-meter, oh, it's so frustrating for me.
Yeah. I was the same way once I started actually really analyzing film and story structure and everything else like that.
Story structure is another
Before, one. Movies were movies. Television yeah. was television, and it was an escape, and it was entertainment.
Yeah.
Now it's, oh, wow, why'd you do that? Why'd you make yeah. that choice?
How well can they craft a puzzle piece that'll fit into the niches I want?
Yeah.
I really do feel that often.
And now I'm more critical of characters like Dr. Warren Voss, because he's the cause of the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Through his experimentation, he accidentally got his daughter infected with this adolescent hyper-aggressive rage syndrome, which I'm sure isn't real, but for the whole intents and purposes of this story, we're going to believe it's a very rare disease. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. This leads to his wife leaving him and the daughter, though. So, you know, wife, maybe not all that great. But then you've got a man who, now I have to fix my mistake.
Yeah. I don't think I actually thought of that either, but until right now, is that there is a section inside of the spectrum of autism that there's actually someone that I'm thinking of right now that my daughter and I interacted with when she was in a cheerleading program now, 8-9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of that program it wasn't Rage Monster daughter, but it's a very young girl who has very severe autism that can be, again, I don't want to put her into the monster category. She can be controlled, but she has to be mom has to be right with her all the time.
Yeah.
Because at some point she's just going to start having a bad day, like screaming and lashing out and doing a lot of the same things that we see here. Not the biting and the scratching and I'm going to kill you stuff.
Right.
It's severe. So somewhere between what we see here inside of this episode and what is inside of real life, there are things like that. Is there something that could be put into a syringe and then given to someone else like that? No. I don't think that there is.
That's the fantasy angle of this episode.
When you lump that in again with the curse part, then it all spools into the story that works.
But with it being the late 80s, they still really didn't understand autism very well back then. So again, this could have actually been somebody... The writers could have been like, I've seen this before. I mean, it there is enough of reality in this story to where you overlook the fantastical stuff and just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And with having a character of a villain, because he is the bad guy, and having a villain like Warren, Daddy Warren, it really drives it home going, making you have to ask those tough questions.
Yeah.
Could I do this? If I was responsible for the state in which my child is in.
Nothing is over the top. As I say those words, I kind of cackle to myself because inside of the retail, Nick and I had a lot of fun with Rage Monster.
Well, right, yeah.
And so the Rage Monster stuff is, again, I'm so incredibly lucky that I don't have anything in my life that is anything like any of this here. My now 16-year-old daughter is a teenage rage monster, but nothing to the level of what we're looking at here. She has her moments where she's inconsolable, but, you know, teenager.
Teenagers,
I remember that myself. And
I think I'm more afraid of teenagers than I am of anything that's shown up on this show.
And I agree with that. The value here is that when you look across the entire span of the episode, we don't ever devolve into... In the case of bad, twirling mustaches, or in the case of good, a small, silent moment when a cape is flittering behind somebody, or anything in between that is over the top.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, because the context of this episode would easily gravitate towards doing that.
Well, right.
Where imagine if you know, they had a whole bunch of, like, scenes from The Reanimator with the father twirling his mustache with one hand, and in the other is this massive syringe. We don't really have anything like that inside this
episode.
It's
kind of funny that you compare this to Reanimator, because that's what I was thinking in my head as we were watching it. Reanimator is one of my all-time favorites of the 80s. Because when you think about advances in science in human history, most of those things came out of horrible things that have happened or were forced upon human beings. When he and Mickey are having that exchange, you know, I could save hundreds of lives by just killing a few more people. Isn't it worth it? And she screams, no. She's right morally, but in the larger scheme of things, as a logical person, well, what is that saying we always go back to? The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Or the one. Yeah. So
and it's funny that we're glancing across these many different cinematic themes. The big one that I would throw in here also is this is almost the antithesis of Schindler's List.
Mm.
Where I just need to save one more.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no. you don't get one more in this case, dude. Sorry. Anyway, I love that. It was all, while the topic itself is way over the top. You got to be kidding me.
Well, right, yeah.
21-inch steel syringe into somebody's face, and now everything's just fine. It that is over the top. But everything that's showcased inside of the episode, I love that none of it is over the top. And that's where we ask you guys, what did you find good inside this episode? Let us know what you think by going over to our website. Go on over to CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Fill out the quick web form and tell us what you're thinking.
Well, every episode of Friday the 13th, the series, has goods and bads. We've covered the goods. Now let's take a look at some of the not-so-goods. Unneeded tethers. I think one of the few, and I mean few, things that I could mark down as a ding for this episode is the tethers that they try to create for the cursed item to history. They're not needed.
Right.
You know, we get a little bit from the manifest, you know, it's, oh, so it was used by a murderer who claimed he was Jack the Ripper. Now, was he Jack the Ripper or not? We don't know. It's one of the world's greatest unsolved mysteries. Mm-hmm. But then also we mix in the concept of the whole good and evil, where's the soul, what controls us from being just savage animals. And you toss in the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde into the mix as well. And I feel having those things tossed in kind of does a disservice to the episode because they're not needed. We don't need an explanation why this is a cursed syringe. It's a cursed syringe. End of story. Let's move on.
Yeah. I sometimes wish that they would do that way more often.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I think that we were just talking about something like this inside this very episode, where the more that's heaped on, the more you have to go one of two ways. You either have to just go, fine, it's entertainment, and throw up your hands, which I hate. I hate that.
Unless I'm actually looking for something like that. Switch off your brain. I just want to watch something.
Yeah. Or you've got to go in the other direction where you somehow have to incorporate it into what you're watching, and now it's a speed bump. And so that's a very difficult road for me.
Well, the fact that we've already had an item that was rumored to be connected to Jack the Ripper already. We had that in season one, Dr. Jack, the scalpel.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We don't need to retread old stuff.
Right.
And then the concept of tossing in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, one thing that a lot of people forget is that the original story, the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, had nothing to do with finding the cure between good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
It had more to do with taking away the consequence of doing evil things.
Mm-hmm.
The serum that Dr. Jekyll actually creates, yes, it does take away his inhibitions, but it also changes his physical appearance. There is no split personality in the story. He is still Dr. Jekyll, just uninhibited and now looks completely different. So he can get away with whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And doesn't have to worry about the repercussions.
Yeah.
Now, yes, we all love the whole concept of good versus evil because that is what has evolved from the Jekyll and Hyde story. It's synonymous with the Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the bedrock of Bruce Banner and the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not dismissing the cool aspect of good versus evil, but really, if you're going to compare it to something, don't compare it to something that really doesn't have anything to do with what's happening in your episode.
Yeah, and see, that's again where you've got to put on the analytical hat, and how does Jekyll and Hyde impact inside this episode? And beyond knowing you have, hello, I'm Dr. Jekyll, and
I'm the other guy that's drunk.
Beyond knowing that, see, my opinion, it doesn't matter. Doesn't
right, exactly.
If it was just a cursed syringe, period, we're done. And then you can have whatever happens with the characters, whether it's, that's where I almost just wanted his daughter to be the rage monster that's in the upstairs bedroom. And you have none of the whole guilt thing of, he had a syringe filled with magic juice that she accidentally pricked her finger on. I could have done without all that too.
Hmm.
I think it would have been way more endearing in that he has a problem. And my God, all I want is a normal daughter. Wouldn't that have been a very interesting thing? I realize that you shovel on the guilt with the whole, whoops, I'm a doctor and I left this incredibly virulent disease-ridden syringe laying on a table and my 12-year-old daughter.
Just because you're the last in your class still means you're a doctor, though.
So I guess we can throw that into the negatives also, but... It's where if none of that stuff existed, I would never even have thought of it, and it would definitely elevate the episode for me, because I wouldn't have to think about it.
Stop me if you've heard this one. Mickey goes to a creepy house looking for murder and kidnapping answers alone? Yeah. All right, we're halfway through season two. Yeah. Mickey's been doing this for a while now.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Why are we going alone when we're pretty damn sure that this is the guy that is responsible for the death, kidnapping, and death of all of these hookers?
Yeah.
And her friend, her college roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are going alone, why are you going unarmed?
I don't know.
I mean, I get they don't carry guns, but why don't we have a knife, maybe some mace?
I don't know, something. The bottom line is that this is all established inside of the 80s. And inside the 80s, what we had was screaming woman, gorgeous, usually, going into environments that they should never go in, screaming and either being murdered or becoming the implement of whatever the plot, air quotes, device is. And I really hate that.
I understand you hate it, but me being a fan of the horror genre as a whole, that's kind of like the meat and potatoes of the late 70s all through the 80s.
I get it. I get it. And I'll even
I'm not saying
I'll
it's
even
great.
Accept it. I just think it's stupid.
It's not all that bright, no.
Mickey would never get in a car alone. In fact, I Jack and Ryan would never allow it. Hey guys, I'm going to jump in the Benz and I'm going to go see Dr. Warren real quick because, you know, who knows? Maybe he needs a light dusting inside the smoking lounge.
Yeah, maybe he knows some answers.
Well, I don't think so.
It's one of those things to where it's you only have three characters.
Right.
So somebody has to be lone wolf at some point in time.
Yeah. And what they also needed was they needed a gorgeous young lady to then also get whacked in the head and put onto a gurney so that the juice can also be stolen from
right.
her.
Right. And it has to be a female because science-wise, the female brain is matched with another female brain. So if anybody's showing up at the house that's going to be put in peril, it would have to be another female.
Wouldn't that
so,
be funny?
He did it.
He takes the juice from Dr. Chadway and whoops, now it's not Amanda, it's Archie.
Well, now we're getting into
I mean, why not, right?
Gender identification at a younger age. And I think that's
what would happen if it was made today.
That is what would happen if it was made today.
That's what would happen if it was made today.
But again, also a very interesting taboo subject, which is something that this show does. It takes those moments in human history and kind of turns it on its ear. That's what horror is supposed to do anyway.
Yeah.
I love this episode, but come on, Mickey. Yeah. Damn it.
And obviously, it's not that our requests are falling on deaf ears. It's just that, there's no way to impact the series because it was 30-plus years
ago.
Well,
true.
But I so hate that. And I wish it would just be dismissed because it's, especially in today's environment, I wish that would
get gone. They're not doing it as much today. People, writers, filmmakers, and audiences, that's the most important thing. The audience is a hell of a lot smarter.
Yeah.
And they're not going to put up with crap.
Yeah.
And the ones that do put up with crap, well, they know it's crap, so so they're not investing anything but a good time. Mickey's recovery?
This was a mind-boggler, dude.
This is something that I kind of wish that maybe had we had another five minutes, maybe even less, but just a few more minutes to kind of understand the mechanics of what is being taken out and if it can actually be. We have to assume now, because Mickey continues to be in the series, she's going to get better. She does get better. So as long as your magical soul juice isn't completely depleted from your brain.
Your brain will eventually make more, I guess, is
right.
The theory.
That's the theory.
Okay.
That's right. The theory. That's what I have to tell myself to go, okay, so Mickey's fine. Because there towards the end, when Daddy Warren falls and the syringe is laying on the floor and Jack's looking at him and then looking over at passed out Mickey, I'm thinking, are we using the cursed item to fix our friend? We've done it before. And I thought it was going to happen, but it didn't.
I thought exactly the same thing,
and
dude.
If it did happen, it would have been a huge flag for this episode because Jack's smart, but Jack is not Jack Marshak, man of knowing exactly where to put a giant frickin' syringe underneath the neck into the brain to reinsert soul juice. So... I'm glad that didn't happen, but a little bit more explanation of how she's going to get better would have been helpful, because now one would believe that had Warren not depleted the soul brain juice from the other women, they would have gotten better. Mm. So technically, he didn't really have to kill anybody. But of course, it's a cursed item, so you know you got to kill people, or else the cursed item doesn't work. Mm. It's a mystery, and it's one of those very small speed bumps that kind of go, well, okay, well, since there's only like a minute and a half left of this episode, I'll take it. Okay. You've entertained me so much that I don't want anything bad to happen to Mickey anyway, so let's just say she spends a couple of weeks in bed trying to regain her humanity instead of, coffee, stuff like that. it's just one of those things that I had a head scratching moment, but I didn't have a lot of time to think about it because the credits start rolling. So, yeah. You know, you're moving on.
No, I totally agree with that. I would have loved to have seen something different here. Again, back to a different podcast that you and I are familiar with, where the whole rewind and rewrite thing. If I had to jump into something like that for this, what I would love to have seen was Ryan is helping Mickey to the kitchen or out of her bed to go and change clothes or something. And as he helps her and she doesn't look up, but she is now walking appropriately, Ryan looks up at Jack and gives him a nod and then goes back to helping her. And then Jack, you know, he casually looks over his shoulder and then down at the ground and then snap the black or frozen image or whatever.
Yeah, and then maybe in the next episode, she's still recovering, so she has to stay at the shop.
Right, she's got the dentist head wrap thing going on.
Yeah, there you go. Wearing a robe, giant, almost looks like a reverse turban thing.
Yes.
She's got the mummy look kind of going on for her, but she's recovering.
Yes. I would so dig that. And I know it's not so, again, it doesn't impact anybody, but that there's your payoff.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it would have needed. It would have taken 5 minutes. It almost makes me think, like, was Roby just not available that afternoon? If that's the case, what you have then is you then have Jack at the front of the hall. You have Ryan leaving the room at the back of the hall, and he's closing the door, and he walks up, and then you have the scene that we see, and at least you have that.
Yeah,
And even that, I think, would have been better than what we got, but, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Well, those are the things that we thought needed a little bit of polish inside of this episode of Friday the 13th, the series, but we want to know what you thought could use some work. Head on over to our website at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Fill out the contact form and let us know what you thought were not so goods in this episode.
Good grief, we're running long here during this episode of the Curious Goods Podcast. We will be right back.
Thought about a career in voiceover? Need a great, cost-effective on-hold message for your organization or business? Don't know where to start? Check out The Voice Farm, your one-stop shop for voiceover needs. Check it out now by accessing The Voice Farm at voicefarmers.com and see what difference can be made with a company that is truly outside the box. From The Voice Box, voicefarmers.com. That's voicefarmers.com.
Wouldn't it be cool if your advertising could last forever? It can, with perpetual advertising. Here's how it works. Magazine, radio, and television ads are efforts that people might see or hear once, and then they're lost forever. Perpetual advertising provides you with the chance for repeat exposure and replayability weeks, months, even years after it's originally inserted inside a podcast. So even if your advertising is included in a podcast years ago, those efforts are still impactful, providing you with true return on investment, real impact, thanks to perpetual advertising. Are you ready to change the way you and your company or organization advertises? Find out more and launch a unique perpetual advertising effort now by visiting twoguystalking.com/sponsors.
Make your podcast soar with the Editor Corps. Editing podcasts can be, rough. Everyone knows that you'll spend at least double the time you use creating the podcast when editing it. Then there's the control freak factor and the gotta get it right the first time. Well, it's time to shove all that out the door and make your podcast soar with the Editor Corps. The Editor Corps is a talented, experienced team of podcast editors that have edited tens of thousands of hours of podcast content, and they're ready for yours now. Check out EditorCorps.com because it's time to make your podcast soar. EditorCorps.com. That's EditorCorps.com.
Everyone, welcome back to the Curious Goods Podcast, a retelling, a revisit, and a complete educational detailing of each and every episode of Friday the 13th, the series. This time, Season 2, Episode 15,
Better Off Dead.
Every time Nick and I come back from break, it's time to unveil our manifest moments. The manifest moments inside this podcast are where Nick and I look at either an actor's portrayal, a storytelling element inside the episode, or something else that has tripped our collective review night. Fantastic. Nick, what have you got?
My manifest moment is going to revolve around something I don't think we've ever really done before.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the actual title of the episode,
mm.
Better Off Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm not going to spend the next 5 minutes comparing it to the lovable John Cusack film by the same name. One of the things that we were talking about as we were compiling the skeleton for this episode,
mm-hmm.
the title, Better Off Dead, what are they actually trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that Amanda, the character of Amanda, is better off dead than having to be constantly injected and going back and forth to normal, back to Rage Monster? Because she was initially infected on accident? Or are they trying to say the women that Dr. Warren kidnaps and experiments on and drains them of their quote-unquote humanity, are they better off dead than being the, well, soulless beasts that they turn into right before he whacks them on the head with a shovel?
Mm-hmm.
It's questions because there is no answer.
Right.
There is no answer. And I like the fact that the title... And most of the titles for these episodes are either like spot on or so ambiguous that you don't even, what are they trying to say with this?
Yeah.
Let us not forget, Night Hunger.
Yeah.
What? What? I mean, sure, most of the episode took place at night.
Yeah.
Nobody was eating.
I was hungry for a sandwich after you and I finished that episode.
I could have run to White Castle. Because when I think of Night Hunger, I think of getting some Whiteys. But for this episode, Better Off Dead, just contemplating on what they're actually trying to allude to leads to a whole nother series of questions and takes you down another rabbit hole.
Yes.
And so that's why I wanted it as my manifest moment.
Yeah. And I dig that a lot. It's something that I think we accidentally
approached. You pointed it out as you were typing.
Yeah.
Better Off Dead. What are they trying to say, Nick?
Yeah.
And I didn't have an answer then, but I have one now.
I love this program because it allows us to reflect on our own lives, but also it allows us to expand our general universe.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to have had one of the stars of the show connect with us.
Oh, yeah.
John DeLemay for this, inside of this podcast. What he has also shared is a series of connections that are to writers and directors of this show. And I would love to ask the director of this episode, what was the intention? Because he'd be able to tell us.
I'd like to talk to the writer.
Yeah.
As well, yeah.
That's something that we're definitely going to explore, especially with the benefit and I know incredibly satisfying experience of this podcast, in particular for me, I would love to go back and revisit any of the episodes from any season, anytime, with any of those very special people that helped to make the episodes to give us more insight, but frankly, more content for you guys. I thrive on being able to go back and know more about the things that I care about at all, especially in entertainment.
Right, yeah.
It's why DVD and Blu-ray commentary stuffs, man, you talk about what gives me the fizz. That gives me the fizz.
Well, that's the whole reason why I actually continue to purchase Blu-rays, because of the extra content.
Yeah. Some of the ones that I think are just brilliant that people should make sure they go and check out. Age of Ultron from the MCU. For those of you that haven't listened to that, you need to go and listen to that, because that is not only Joss Whedon in the throes of incredible frustration. It's very revealing. I can't believe it. A lot of what's in there actually made it to the track. He's not besmirching Marvel, but he is talking about things that are very, very uncomfortable for anybody that might be inside that organization. And I was struck on what you'll actually hear inside of that. So make sure you go and listen to that. And then you'll understand a little bit of the spotlight that you'll never, ever get anywhere else. The value of podcasting for me is being able to provide light bulb moments for anybody that's listening. And the value of the chemistry set that Nick and I have is that Nick and I ourselves actually have light bulb moments during our podcasts. And I love that. My manifest moment inside of this episode is epic. It's when Ryan jacks Mickey. You and I have commented on this a couple of times inside of this series where, damn if it didn't look like a dude hit a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was a good one. Kudos to the sound guy that was on staff that mixed this. Because, wow, the sound that is accompanied
was a hell of a pop.
Was phenomenal. It was a punch of something, and it was glorious.
Most of the time, the audio people will take slabs of raw meat and hit it and just record themselves hitting raw meat to get that sound.
Yeah.
It usually works out pretty well.
Yeah. This had the leathery, not leather effect of I have a boxing glove and I'm striking your face. It wasn't that, but it had like somebody was, so it sounded like somebody punched something leathery.
Mm.
So it had that sound, and it was spot on, and just the groove that was filmed as he was being punched was just amazing.
And just in case anybody is misconstruing your comment and we get hate emails, we're not saying we condone the violence against women.
Yay for women violence. No.
Right, yeah, because that's what this is. It's the Yay for Women's Violence podcast.com. What we're saying is that the crafting of the violence against anybody, but mostly in this show's case, man versus woman.
Versus rage monster.
Well, and she was a rage monster at this moment. It wasn't just some hapless hooker, because we've seen that a couple of times in the past as well.
Yeah.
It sells the illusion of the episode.
Yes.
If it was hokey, then why would we be talking about this show?
Right. The other thing, that, again, to hammer point why I'm referring to this, is because it is the cessation of an incredibly impactful event. What is it that Ryan's going to do to get the rage monster off of him?
And he has to punch her.
He has to knock her out. Yeah. And it is spectacular. It is incredibly well crafted. And again, my total kudos to the sound guy that pulled it off, and the camera people that really did film something glorious. And that's where we ask you guys, what is your manifest moment from this episode? Let us know what you think by going over to our website. Again, that's CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Fill out the quick web form. Tell us what you think.
Vocabulary.
Vocabulary. Who doesn't love the words that propel the episodes of Friday the 13th, the series?
Rage monsters, Mike. Rage monsters.
Rage monsters. There's another one we missed. That's awesome. Inside this episode, we have a couple that I think you're really, really going to enjoy. The first word, according to our friends over at Visual Thesaurus, is...
Hippocampus.
hippocampus, in addition to completely misspelling the word. Great work, Mr. Mike, former interpreter dude. Really good job. In addition to that, we found out, again, it's H-I-P-P-O-C-A-M-P-U-S, hippocampus. And hippocampus is listed as a complex neural structure shaped like a seahorse, consisting of gray matter and located on the floor of each lateral ventricle, intimately involved in motivation and emotion as part of the limbic system. It also has a central role in the formation of memories. So I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. And it's a great word. You all know, also know how to spell it so that, like Mike, you will be educated for next time. Great word. Our second word inside of vocabulary today is
syringe.
Once again, thanks to our friends over at Visual Thesaurus, a syringe is a medical instrument used to inject or withdraw fluids. It's also noted as a rounded part of a cylindrical instrument, usually at one end. Also, an instrument used in the practice of medicine. What we also wanted to share inside of the syringe concept is the history of the syringe. Because, as you know, Jack the Ripper used a syringe. We know this because we know who Jack the Ripper was. No, we're not going to put that in.
Do we really know
we
exactly
do, but
what
it's just not shared here.
What he used to kill all
that.
Of those.
We don't have to talk about
yeah,
that.
This is not the Jack the Ripper podcast.
Yeah, right. Right. What we also included here is the general history of the syringe because, frankly, it's one of the most endearing parts of this episode. I see this massive syringe mm-hmm. and I instantly go, well, tell me more. What is that exactly?
The funny thing about it is that, and because my wife is a nurse, mm-hmm. she's also into historical medical implementations. Mm-hmm. The stuff that was used for medical purposes mm-hmm. 100, hell, 200 years ago, mm-hmm. arcane looking. Mm. I mean, torture device-esque.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet all in the name of science.
Yeah, very interesting. Inside a quick internet search, what we found about the syringe that I think everybody would find interesting is that the syringe was invented actually in 1853.
Hmm.
The short information that's included with that reads, an Irish physician named Francis Rind invented the hollow needle and used it to make the first recorded subcutaneous injection in 1844. Then shortly thereafter, in 1853, Charles Prevaz, P-R-A-V-A-Z, and Alexander Wood developed a medical hypodermic syringe with a needle fine enough to pierce the skin. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think we all take a lot of stuff like that for granted, and especially inside of just our regular days.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, a nice deep dive into history and the pieces parts of what is a very interesting adventure down medicine lane. That's where we ask you, what vocabulary did you find inside this episode that you thought was interesting? Let us know what you think by going to our website at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Fill out the web form and tell us what vocabulary struck you from this episode.
Episode rating.
The rating inside the Curious Goods Podcast. It's time to provide a rating for this episode of Friday the 13th, this series. The scale works thusly. A 1 is on the bottom of the list. A rage-filled, scurrying streetwalker, now transformed into the hunchback that's awaiting death. A 10 is on top of the list. Mickey in a couple of months vacation up in the second level of the Curious Goods shop. Everything starts at a 7 as an average. The numbers go up with positives. The numbers go down with negatives. And Nick? There are no halvesies. Nick, what do you got?
This is another episode I do not remember seeing when I was younger.
No,
so
I
this
never
was
saw
first time for me.
Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. It took us a little bit of nitpicking to actually come up with our bads.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually examine the bads, they're bads. They are definitely dings against this episode. Not wanting to be such a stern taskmaster and take off points for each of these bads. What I'm going to do is I'm actually just going to roll them up into a nice ball
because when you take them all together, they do equal out to maybe 1 point of ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. I'm going to rate this episode a 9.
Mm. There's a lot of logic that's inside of your number there, and I think I have to agree with you. What I always try to think of is, if I was going to tell somebody to watch an episode of this show to get a flavor of it, would this be one of them? And this is absolutely one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the only real ding inside of the episode, frankly, is the end. Because what I do love is when shows really do show consequences of what's happened inside of the episode, regardless of what happens inside the episode.
Right.
And that we don't have beyond, Mickey's upstairs recovering from her incredibly almost death experience. Eh, I didn't care for that. So I, too, am going to knock one number off of this episode and give this episode a good solid 9. That's where we ask you guys, what did you think of this episode, season 2, episode 15?
Better Off Dead.
Let us know what you think by accessing our website over at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Fill out the quick web form and tell us what you rate this episode. Ah, the end of yet another brilliant episode of the Curious Goods Podcast complete. Putting a checkbox in that. Oh, I do see her, Nick, on my to-do list. We've had some guests that have been waiting for us to finish this episode of the Curious Goods Podcast. Yes, they're actually in the other room. And what I need you to do is, I've got an entire platter of finger sandwiches. I figured
good.
Yeah, they're tremendous. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take these finger sandwiches into the other room and reward our guests that have been awaiting you for the last, took an hour and 27 minutes to capture this episode.
Oh, well,
they're ready to feast, for sure. So go take care of that.
Strange
for me, okay?
Word to use, but sure, all right.
Yep, here you go.
Sandwich.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Curious Goods Podcast. We are always interested in learning what you remember about these enchanted items and their tales of reacquisition. Connect with us immediately at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com to share your treasured information. Until the next artifact reveals itself, the vault is now closed.
Why aren't we Facebook Live in this shit?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't have any video content on your podcast?
Maybe this point right here, during the retelling, we need to start Facebook Live.
Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be fun?
Everybody, this is for you.
You know what vocabulary struck me inside this episode?
Streetwalker.
Ah!
Hooker. Prostitute.
Streetwalker.
Rage-filled hunchback.
Scurrying through the forest.
Scurry, 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 scurry.
Back in Daddy Warbucks.
Daddy Warbucks.
I knew it was going to happen. I was just wondering when.